It's very, very common, unfortunately, for people to get themselves into trouble when they're out in Lake Michigan. What are some of the latest statistics, unfortunately, on the drowning situation this year?
Well, right now in the Great Lakes, there's 20 drownings that we're tracking for this year, which brings the grand total since 2010 to 557 drownings on the Great Lakes. And with Great Lakes drownings, about half of them happen on Lake Michigan, and then half of Lake Michigan drownings happen on the south end of Lake Michigan.
For people that aren't aware of it, why is the south end of Lake Michigan, of course, from the end that we happen to be on, why is it so dangerous?
I think part of it is going to be, one, the configuration of Lake Michigan. It's 307 miles from north to south, and we get the prevailing winds, which are coming from the north or northwest, which creates a lot of wave activity and dangerous currents on the south end of the Great Lakes. In addition to that, there's a high population that lives in the area from Chicago to northwest Indiana, southwest Michigan, and then with that, a lot of tourism, especially in the summertime, everyone wants to cool off and go to the beach. So it's just, a unique mix of high population and a location that can be dangerous, especially if you don't know what the hazards are. And if you don't know just the basics, that drowning is one of the leading causes of accidental death in the United States and the world. So most people don't know that. They might think, okay, we're going to the beach, it's like we're going to the park. But if you fall off the monkey bars, you might sprain an ankle. But if you get in trouble and water over your head, it may cost you your life.
One of the things I know that you have to stress whenever you talk to people about the subject, and as we mentioned at the start of the conversation, that includes talking with the young people at schools or in separate groups outside. I know, in fact, you've just completed a series of talks here not long ago over here in northwest Indiana to alert them about the dangers of swimming in Lake Michigan and not being aware of the surroundings at all. When we get into these situations, is just a fact that people, like you mentioned before, they think it's like swimming in a swimming pool, although those could be dangerous too, but it's even worse when you've got that push of water coming out of the north, coming towards the not only the lakefront, but also, I guess, the beaches as well, too.
If somebody were to submerge in a pool, it's a contained body of water, and it's got high visibility or higher visibility than what you have in the Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so if somebody goes missing underwater in the Great Lakes, it's a large body of water. It's not contained. There's currents that could, drift the body in different directions. In addition, there's very, very low visibility. And so, if you don't have eyes on the water at all time, monitoring the people in the water to, actually know what drowning really looks like versus the Hollywood version of it, and witnessing someone in distress and being able to get something to them that floats immediately, then it's a huge, huge problem. And, what we want people to know is that with drowning, time is of the essence. If somebody is actively drowning, they're doing the signs of drowning, which is typically facing shore, mouth at water level, head tilted back, doing a climbing the ladder motion, there's not a lot of waving, yelling, and splashing. If they're doing those drowning response signs, it's typically less than 60 seconds until final submersion.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So if you don't have eyes on the water, and if you can't spot that person who's subtly drowning, it's very subtle, you're gonna miss them. And then people also need to know is once that person submerges, at 2 minutes, if they're recovered and CPR and artificial respiration is properly performed, it's about a 94% survival rate. But at 10 minutes of submersion, that survival rate's only about 14%. So how fast can you get something to them that floats? How long would it take to, one, realize the person submerged, two, call 911, and then for 911 to pinpoint your location, to send dispatch, and for them to arrive? They're arriving past the 10-minute marks. So lifeguards really, really are the biggest factor in here. If we can have properly trained open water surf lifeguards who are monitoring the beach, know what to look for, and are, physically trained to get out there and get flotation to that person. And then, in the event that someone does submerge, being able to get to that last point of seeing at the water and then be able to do an underwater search and get them back up and on shore, you know, within a couple of minutes to get that CPR and artificial respiration going. It's very, very time sensitive, and people just aren't aware of that.
There are some great diagrams if you want to go to the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project website and take a look at these. One is entitled, How Does Drowning Look, or What Does Drowning Look Like? And the other one is an interesting description of the steps that you need to follow if you find yourself out there or if you're with other people who find themselves in this situation. Check it out on the website. Let's go through them, if we will, here, Dave. And you've mentioned some of the points already here. And you talked about the Hollywood view of drowning. I guess you think about, of course, the trailer for the movie Jaws with the person floundering in water. And, of course, the great white shark coming up behind him or underneath him, whatever. That's not the way that drowning really, really looks. Like, tell us about it.
No, and we more relate it to, like, the old TV show Baywatch, mm-hmm. where, you know, every episode, there's several rescues in the episode, and it would be a long, traumatic event where someone's at the surface of the water for 2 to 5 minutes, you know, yelling, waving, splashing, a long, traumatic event so that they can cut to a lifeguard in a tiny bathing suit running in slow motion with theme music to, you know, then get in the water and make the rescue in time for commercial break. Unfortunately, that image of drowning as a long, traumatic, visible event, you know, translated into beach signs where they would show, like, you know, danger of drowning, where it's like somebody in chest-deep water with their arms up in the air or waving their hands or yelling for help. And so we want people to know that drowning doesn't look like how drowning or how Hollywood has portrayed it, and that it's very, very subtle. That if somebody, you know, a distressed swimmer may have some ability to do some yelling or splashing, but they exhaust themselves pretty quick. And once their body goes vertical in the water, facing shore, mouth at water level, head tilted back, hyperventilating, you know, doing climbing the ladder motion with their hands are barely breaking the surface. I mean, it's dire. They need something. They need immediate assistance. Anything that floats, whether it's a life ring or a football or a volleyball or even a cooler, something that floats, they need it as soon as possible to interrupt the drowning process. Because once we, you know, as said before, it's very, very time sensitive. 2 minutes of submersion, it could be a full recovery. 10 minutes of submersion, it's likely a body recovery.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Dave Benjamin, who is the co-executive director of the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project, about the dangers of swimming, or surfing for that matter, and not being aware of your surroundings. If you're in Lake Michigan, some tips to know if you find yourself or if you're with friends and find themselves in the situation of drowning and how to save your life, as well as your friends that might be with you as well, too. One of the diagrams that Dave, I know, is listed on the website and we've mentioned, you talked a little bit about some of the steps here, flip, float, and follow. Tell us what that will designate and what, in turn, might help save your life if you follow that advice.
If you ever find yourself struggling in water over your head, what we advocate is that people flip, float, and follow. It's the stop, drop, and roll of water safety. Mm-hmm. And how it works is, you flip over on your back and you float. The emphasis is on floating. You float to keep your head above water. You float to calm yourself down from the fear and extreme panic of drowning. And you float to conserve your energy. And then you follow the safest path back to shore. So we want to, you know, really emphasize is the ability to float or to have something with you that floats, like a life jacket. You know, flotation is the key. If, you know, some people tell us, I can't float. We say, well, if you're in a drowning situation, do you want to live? Yes or no? If you want to live, you must stay at the surface of the water and continue breathing for as long as possible for either rescue to arrive or until you are able to self-rescue and get back to shallower water where you can stand. We get the most confusion or questions about follow. What does follow mean? Mm-hmm. And follow means follow the safest path out of the water. And then the next question is, what's the safest path? And unfortunately, every drowning is going to be unique to the body of water, the conditions of the water, other waves and dangerous currents, to the water temperature, as well as the person's physical swimming ability and swimming endurance. So that's a lot of factors. So I want people to know that when you go to the water, if you get in trouble, you may have to follow the safest path out of the water, making, you know, that judgment call, what's the safest path out of the water in a life and death situation. and it may not be very easy and may be overwhelming. So continue floating.
Mm-hmm.
Float as long as possible. Flotation is the key. We cannot emphasize that enough.
Now, you mentioned about the fact that that follow whatever the next step is to be able to save your life is difficult, and you've seen enough of these rescues that have happened on Lake Michigan, people that have managed to survive drowning incidents there too. So even though you mentioned that every single case is different, it's pretty unique. Are there any common things that you have discovered in looking at these cases on Lake Michigan in particular that probably people can maybe keep in the back of their minds that if the opportunity presents itself, they can use that as following through?
Always take something with you that floats. You know, and you know, one thing we've seen is that it happens quite a bit is like, people aren't aware of an offshore wind where the wind is blowing from land out to open water. And someone might get in a kayak or on a stand-up paddleboard or some other type of flotation device like a raft. And what happens is the flotation gets caught in the wind and starts blowing away from shore. And the further you get away from shore, the stronger the wind gets and the more turbulent the water gets and the colder the water gets. People often make a fatal mistake is, oh my God, I'm floating away from shore and it's this kayak in the wind. So what I should do is get out of it and try and swim back. The big problem is now you're getting into cold water over your head and your swimming ability likely isn't going to be able to get you back to shore. So we always say, always stay with the flotation device. Mm-hmm. Try and signal for help. So that, you know, maybe somebody with a jet ski or a boat or first responders with a flotation, you know, craft can get to you to make the rescue. But ditching the flotation device, you know, is a fatal mistake. Always stay with flotation.
Yeah, that's a very, very wise choice to make here. You have a chance to talk with a lot of people. And we mentioned classes for schools or park groups and things like that about the dangers of swimming in Lake Michigan and some safety tips. You've just mentioned some here, too. How important do you feel and your colleagues there at the Great Lakes Surf Rescue Project feel about having some kind of regular training or at least some kind of instruction in schools away from the lake, at least let them know about these dangers, so this way they might be prepared when weather warms up and they go out swimming?
It is absolutely essential to have a water safety school curriculum in place, not just in the Great Lakes region, but really nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Main reason why is because people go on vacation. Wherever they go on vacation, there's going to be some type of water. You go to a hotel, there's going to be an unguarded pool. You know, if you go to, you know, Pure Michigan, one in five jobs is related to water. Everywhere you go, there's water. There's inland lakes, there's streams, there's rivers, there's the Great Lakes. And, you know, people really need to know what to do around water. And unfortunately, you know, we do two types of presentations. We do public presentations and we do, you know, like, say, school presentations. A public presentation is a volunteer audience. A school presentation is a captive audience. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids are in school and they're going to that presentation that day. We've noticed that, you know, when we have a public presentation, we might get one person that shows up or 20 people that show up. Or rare occasions, if we have a great organizer, we'll get 100 people that show up. Okay, and that's a very, very small attendance. Whereas if we go to a high school that has 2,000 students, we can see 2,000 students in the day. Now, when we have public presentations and we're inviting people to attend these public presentations, you know what the number one thing we hear?
What?
The number one thing we hear is that I know how to swim. I don't have to worry about drowning. My kids know how to swim. They don't have to worry about drowning.
Oh, that's what bad advice could you give? That's not wise.
And the harsh reality is that two-thirds of all drowning victims, 66%, are good swimmers, okay? So there's a disconnect there. And I often say to people in reply, hey, I know how to run, but I couldn't run a marathon right now if my life depended on it, okay? A drowning accident is a marathon for your life. It's not about how fast you can get out of the water. It's how long you can stay at the surface of the water until you can, you know, reach shore or rescue to arrive. And so we got to make that connection. And unfortunately, you know, one-on-one conversations is a very small way to make that connection. If we can get into schools and we can educate students the way that we educate for fire drills, tornado drills, school shooter drills, even earthquake drills, schools in Illinois and Indiana have earthquake drills. Do you remember how bad the last earthquake was in Indiana? Because I don't remember in my lifetime if there's been a fatal earthquake.
Not around here. We've had ones that people have noticed, but that's only it, basically.
Right. And the big picture is, in my almost 50 years of lifetime, I can't remember a fatal earthquake in Indiana. But on average, in the United States, 10 people per day will die drowning. Okay, so there's a huge disconnect for the need for earthquake drills in schools versus the need for water safety in schools. And don't get me wrong, I'm not opposed to earthquake drills in schools. I'm simply saying we need to elevate water safety to the realm of other safety programs like fire drills, tornado drills, school shooter drills, and earthquake drills. Because the big picture drowning is that it's likely that more school-age children will die drowning each year than die in fires, tornadoes, school shooters, and earthquakes combined. So it's time to wake up, America, and get water safety in schools. And, you know, one thing I like to mention is we have conditional approval for a Department of Natural Resources grant that will provide 100 school presentations in Northwest Indiana for next school year. With that grant, we'd also be creating a train-the-trainer program, so instructional materials and videos, so we can implement it, you know, on a much wider basis, and all materials produced will be for use in the Great Lakes region.